Good afternoon, everybody. Glad to see all those that can make it out tonight. For our lesson this evening, it's not going to be an overly long lesson, but the theme or the topic of tonight is we're going to look at some common phrases that we use in our language today and some phrases that actually originate and come from the Bible. So, for a short while tonight, we're going to look at a couple different phrases, common phrases that we use in the Bible. There are four, to be exact. And we'll just look at them, and I thought we could kind of discuss how we use them in our language and in our conversation today. And then we could go back and find where in the Bible they're at and kind of find, look at the context and how they were used and maybe see the meaning of what they meant back then and compare them to how they mean today. But before we go any further, we have the opportunity to go to God in a word of prayer. So, a little while tonight, we will look at four common phrases that we use in our language today and actually originate from the Bible. And so our four phrases tonight are, by the skin of your teeth, you reap what you sow, iron sharpens iron, and a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so our first phrase for tonight will be, by the skin of your teeth. Now this is a phrase that we've all heard. It's nothing new to us. If I were to have to define this phrase in my own words, I would just make it means by a very, very small margin. An example, I'm going to paint a picture for you. There's an event, a competition going on. It's a race, a foot race between me and Jake. You have the track filled with the stands. You have announcers broadcasting the event. It's a main event. You have the starter gun guy ready to go. And you have me and Jake in the first two lanes racing against each other. As that starter gun goes off, Jake, with his super quick feet and insanely fast speed, he's on my heels the whole entire race. Finally, when we get down to the very end, we get down to the finish line, Jake, right behind me, dives and stretches out his arms so that he will cross the finish line before I do. Since this race was timed, Jake ended up winning, and he won the race, and his final time for the race was 12.1 seconds. And me, who got beat, finished last or second, got a time of 12.15 seconds. So, Jake won by 0.05 seconds, 0.05 seconds. After he wins, the announcer, proclaiming Jake victorious, yells out, "Jake, with an amazing victory, walks away victorious by the skin of his teeth. He barely won by a very, very small margin." Now, that is a common phrase we all know and understand today, and that's my personal way of describing it. But when you look at where this phrase is found in the Bible, it's actually found in the book of Job, Job chapter 19. So I thought I'd just read where in the Bible it says it, and I could kind of give some context around this verse. So Job chapter 19, verse 20, the Bible reads, "My bone clings to my skin and to my flesh, and I have escaped by the skin of my teeth." In Job's story, we all know that Job was faced with some very, very serious hardships and very hard obstacles to overcome in his life. He lost family. He lost his children. His children passed away. He lost his wealth. He had so many terrible things that happened to him. But as we know, Job never lost faith in God. Along the way in Job's journey, there are these people that I like to call Job's doubters. They doubted Job that he could make it through. They doubted Job that he could overcome these trials and tribulations. And they often, in fact, urged Job to set aside God, to push away God. Why do you keep coming to God when all these bad things are happening to you? Just let it go. They always tried to push him away from God. But as we know, Job remained faithful to God. One of his doubters, in Job chapter 19, he was responding to one of his doubters. The doubter was the name Bildad the Shuhite. But in Job chapter 19, starting in verse 19, the Bible reads, "All my close friends abhor me, and those whom I love have turned against me. My bone clings to my skin and to my flesh, and I have escaped by the skin of my teeth. Have pity on me, O you, my friends, for the hand of God has struck me. Why do you persecute me as God does? Are you not satisfied with my flesh?" And he continues on just a few verses later in verse 25. Job reads, "For I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth. And after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I see God. So in his response to his doubter, Job tells him that he escaped by the skin of his teeth. And I believe that the meaning in the biblical translation is very similar to the meaning that we have today. It's by a very slim margin. Job was faced with so many difficult things, a lot of things that were very hard to overcome, things that not a lot of people could have overcome. And along the way, he had his doubters. He had people that were urging him and pushing him to set aside God, to just leave it in the past and try to get over these things by yourself and move on. But he never did. He got close sometimes. By the skin of his teeth, he was able to overcome and stay faithful to his God. Moving on to our second phrase. Our second phrase is what you sow. And this phrase is found in the 6th chapter of Galatians. When I look at this phrase, reap what you sow, in our language today, I think it simply means that your actions have consequences, whether those actions are, or whether those consequences are good or bad. So Galatians chapter 6, this phrase is found in verse 7. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 reads, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life." So just like our first example, I don't think the meaning has changed over the years. I think the meaning is still the same. When you chase after and when you make decisions based on desires of the flesh, on material things, on earthly things, when you chase after those things, then you will have to deal with the consequences. But when you sow, or when you reap and chase after the spiritual things, so it's calling me. Spiritual things, then that's when you will reap and enjoy the consequences, or the good consequences of everlasting life. And when just looking on the internet, I came across a quote that I really thought applied to this phrase specifically that I just really love and I wanted to share. So for the past year or so, one of my hobbies has been going to the gym, and I like to work out. And I think a lot of people agree with me that when you go to the gym, you go to the gym because you have a goal, whatever that goal is, if it's to put on muscle, if it's to get a little slimmer, a little bit of both, if you just go to the gym because you enjoy working out, whatever that goal is, people who go to the gym go because they have a goal. And in this quote went something along the lines of this: if you're trying to put on muscle in the gym, you don't just work out on Sundays. And I really like that quote. When I think of these massive bodybuilders, I've seen some videos of them guys. If you don't know what they look like, they look completely unnatural, completely freakish. They might be 5'8", but they weigh 280 pounds and they're pure muscle. It's very unnatural, very unnatural is the only way I can describe it. But when you look at these massive bodybuilders, they're always training and trying to compete in these competitions. And when they do train for these competitions, they don't just work out for an hour on Sundays and then just the rest of the week do whatever they want to do. No, it's every single day they're in the gym working out for hours. And when they're not working out in the gym, they're dieting. They're watching what they're eating. They are constantly trying to stay hydrated, making sure they get enough water. At the end of the day, they always get to bed at a decent time so they can get plenty of rest, good quality rest, so that they can wake up refreshed the next morning to do it all over again. When these bodybuilders are training for these competitions, it's not something that they just do for an hour in the morning on Sundays, but it's a lifestyle for them. And I think the same should be said about our lives today. As Christians, we shouldn't have the mindset of, I got church on Sunday morning, and I'll be there for an hour and a half maybe, once that's over, I'm out the door, and I'm good for the rest of the week until next Sunday morning. That shouldn't be our mindset in these things. But instead, we should have the mindset of, it's a lifestyle, it is a lifestyle. We should always think about our faith and try to strengthen and grow our faith. So that was our second phrase. Our third phrase, which is a common phrase we use, is iron sharpens iron. And out of the four, this is probably the one that I've heard the most, just because this phrase tends to be used a lot in like the sports world when you're surrounded or when you're a part of a team. So what does it mean when iron sharpens iron? Well, the physical, or not physical, the literal meaning is when you need to sharpen something that's iron. You just get another thing that's iron. You see it, you know, in the movies, all the guys with the swords or daggers, whatever it is, when they need to sharpen it, they'll get something iron and rub it against each other. That way they sharpen the swords. But it is a mutual sharpening. Both of these swords, these iron pieces of metal, are getting sharpened. It's a mutual benefit. It's a mutual growth. And that is the same for people. When you talk about people as iron sharpens iron, it is a mutual growth. It is a mutual benefit for those two people. As I mentioned earlier, I hear this a lot in the sports world, just because when you're a part of a team in sports, you always want to make the guys around you better. You want to have iron sharpen iron. You want to have players that are teammates, that are brothers. You want to grow and get better together. I was always told that whenever you're practicing, whatever it is, you always want to try your best, so that way the guy across from you can get better too. When you slack off and when you give half effort, the guy across from you isn't getting any better, and neither are you. But when you both give your best effort, that's when you both mutually benefit. That's when iron sharpens iron. And our phrase is found in the Proverbs chapter 27. So Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Just like the phrase is used today, it's the same meaning. It's a mutual benefit between two parties. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens his countenance of his friend. And so with that, finally we've gotten to our last phrase. And this is the phrase, house divided against itself cannot stand. Again, this is a phrase that we've all heard, we all know, we all understand what it means. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Whenever there is internal fighting, whenever there's internal conflict, that group, whatever it is, it's never going to work out. I don't know if you've ever been a part of a group project or a group assignment where you have, you know, say you have four people that are all working towards the same goal, but two of those people don't get along very well, they bicker, they fight all the time, and they never get anything done. When you're a part of that group, that's not a fun group to be a part of. And on a grade scale, you're, you know, unless one person can suck it up and do most of the work, that group is probably not going to get a very good grade. Those groups, those parties, those houses that are divided against each other can't ever stand. I like to watch those, a genre of shows I like to watch is shows that kind of take place in the medieval period. Sword fighting, you know, riding horses, jousting, you got kings and queens. I just enjoy those type of shows. And in those shows, the idea of a house, a person's house, is always very important. So the way they talk in those shows is, for example, I would be Drew of House Morrison. That's how they describe it in those shows. But your house is just your family's last name. And in these shows, it doesn't matter what your house does, how they do it. All that matters in these shows is your family's legacy. That's the main part of these shows. And there's always a very similar idea in these shows that whenever a family rises to power, they have, however they get to power, whether it's by conquering others or just working their way up through the ranks, whenever a family gets to a place in power, a house gets to a place in power, most of the time, 90% of the time, when that family falls, it's due to some kind of internal conflict. Kids that are, you know, younger, when they grow up, they start fighting. That leads to wars, whatever it is in those shows. 90% of the time when those houses, when those families fall from their high places, from the high powers, it's due to conflict internally in that family. Our final phrase is found in the Bible in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, verse 25. There Jesus says, Remember, the Bible says, But Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself will not stand. Now Jesus, in this chapter, he was preaching to the multitudes, and he gave us a very important verse, and because he would respond to some Pharisees who claimed that Jesus had been casting out demons, but instead of casting them out by God, he had been casting them out by Beelzebub, who was the ruler of demons. And so in response to these Pharisees, he responded in verse 28. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of God, surely the kingdom of God has come upon you. So whenever there is conflict within your house, that house can never stand. We know that. But whenever there is conflict or division amongst your teaching, if things don't coincide, if you say one thing and do the other, that teaching is no good. You have to have a sound and pure teaching all the way around for it to stand true, just like the houses in our phrase. That is why Jesus was telling these people that we must do things by the Spirit of God, which is sure and found, and not have two opposing ideas, or say one thing and do another. And so to conclude for tonight, we looked at four separate phrases we all know, we all understand. By the skin of your teeth, reap what you sow, iron sharpens iron, and a house divided against itself cannot stand. And while the metaphorical meanings behind these phrases, I don't think they've really changed much over the years. I think for the most part they still apply to us today, and they still have relative meaning in our lives today. But I just thought it was interesting to go back and look at where these phrases come from, where they originate from, and just thinking about last week's lesson on Wednesday, hermeneutics, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, just understanding what it is you're teaching, understanding the basics of it. When you look at these phrases, some of these phrases I didn't know they originated from the Bible. I knew iron sharpens iron, that one's pretty obvious, but house divided against itself, I had no idea where it originated from. I just always heard it. And especially with the shows I watched, that's a common phrase that they use in those shows. And so it's interesting to go back and look at where these phrases originate from their history, and to see that their meaning hasn't really changed over the years. They apply to the people back in the biblical times, and they still apply to us today. And with that, that concludes my thoughts for the lesson this evening. I hope that something I said tonight was beneficial, but now we can stand and sing the song of invitation.